Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio with Rich and James. Keeping It Strong Style. All Things Elite. Wrestling Art with Chris Things. Trish and Sarah. And Tunnel Talk. Before moving on, happy birthday to Tunnel Talk, as they celebrated it on the day that I'm recording this. Of course, this is going to come out afterwards, but, you know, birthday week. Birthday week. So you can listen to their birthday week episode. Birthday week's a thing. Also, a congratulations to Trish and Sarah as well. As every single week, I've kind of been promoting how great post-wrestling has been. And also just want to give a massive shout out to how well Trish and Sarah have been covering all the stuff to do with the lawsuit continued as the news has been continuing to come out. So, I'm very happy to be a part of a network with all these amazing people as well. Anyway, my name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. No NXT this week, as I've got too much to say about Raw and SmackDown. And when it came to watching NXT, I was just like, I'm already pushing it with my format. I'm already pushing it this week. Anyway, 30 minutes so I can get back to my party of all barbarians in Baldur's Gate 3, where every problem is resolved by hitting it. And let me tell you, there's been a lot of hitting. Turned Will into a tiger barbarian. Oh, he can jump. Jesus Christ, can he jump? Also, I put Karlach next to anybody and she gives my entire party advantage on the attacks of the person she's next to. It's insane. An all-barbarian party is so fun. Just, you know, I'm in a little bit of a pickle every single time I come across a guy who's resistant to physical attacks because I know I'm on an all-barbarian party. I could do an entire show on Baldur's Gate 3. Unfortunately, that's not the point of the show. Maybe I'll just record it and put it out. Anyway, the SmackDown was live from Memphis, Tennessee. So let's jump on over there to the blue band of this time last week, where The Rock put on a little concert.
Your son's blood is gonna be on this belt. And when that Rock is done whooping your son, and Roman is done beating your son 1, 2, 3, The Rock is gonna take this belt full of your son's blood, and he's gonna walk over to you. Mama Rhodes, The Rock needs you sitting in the first row so the world can see. And The Rock is gonna walk right over to you, Mama Rhodes, and he's gonna hand you this belt. He's gonna hand you this belt right here. And he's gonna put it in your lap. And you're gonna be crying just like your son, and that's okay. Because then The Rock is gonna whisper in your ear, Mama Rhodes. And with all the blood on your son's belt here, and your tears on that belt, The Rock is gonna whisper in your ear, he's gonna wipe your tears away, and he's gonna say, Michelle, what can I say except you're welcome?
First off, come on, Memphis, get your act together. The number of times my TNT Sports 1 feed went black because of your horny asses. keep it down. come on, you know, calm it down. Calm it down. Horny Memphis were treated to a live Rock concert from The Rock himself. The first time I think that's happened in WWE since 2003 with Rocky's amazing heel Rock run. That's 21 years ago now. I can say that as somebody where, for me, that took place in the mysterious times of the land of before, from before I was watching wrestling, or the mysterious lands of the time of before. That makes more sense. But it's been a long time since we've had a Rock concert. So I'm pretty certain he didn't do anything like it with the John Cena stuff. He was in Fruity Pebble mode at that point. But I feel like this is like every single week has been like little additions to The Rock, but it felt like this week there was a huge step in just really leaning into the character fully, not just in the way that he's playing it, but in the way they're presenting him as well. I feel like that was the shift this week. Last week was him as a performer really leaning into the character. This week it was the full presentation also leaning with him. So as he walks out, it did the same intro as it did last week, but instead of kicking into his 2011 theme, it instead kicked in to the heel Hollywood Rock rhythm as we wound back the clock 21 years to that amazing character. Funny how him playing a baddie has now turned the fans fully embracing again. But at the end of the day, the thing that made him popular in the first place was being an absolute asshole and a dick, essentially. And that's what this character is. This is him being all those things, just reminding you why The Rock was so popular as he was. He was a bellend. The Rock wasn't the guy who came out who made funny little jokes with the really protected brand of being such a good guy, a hero for the fans to cheer. The guy who comes in and just saves wrestling, gives it a big boost, and he does it. Or like, he's not doing it for anything for himself, he's doing it for the good of wrestling. He's just that good a guy. Now, the Rock character was an absolute bellend. And this really leads into that. It's also been really refreshing after years and years of The Rock being so protective of his Hollywood brand to see him playing a character like this. We've not seen it for so long. This is a really strong character, and unsurprisingly, the fans are really gravitating towards it. In the promo itself, positioning himself as the final boss, he's telling us what's going to happen to Cody through a message to Mama Rhodes, a Rock-style Cody belt to whip him with in front of his mama, promising to use the Moana lyrics on Cody's mum after he whoops his son bloody at WrestleMania. The way that The Rock delivered those Moana lyrics as well, for him to then completely twist it and look into the camera and deliver it in such a creepy way. It's like, oh, that was really good twisting on the way that song is meant to be delivered. But the actual concert itself, they had country guitar person. I'm English. Country music might as well not exist. The country guitar guy, the guy on a harmonica every now and when went, yeah, oh yeah, cool baby. Stuff like that. Just little inserts. But yeah, the actual concert itself, I really enjoyed it. The Rock coming across as a dick is the best thing that can happen for the Rock character. And really leaning into that here was such a good idea. The Memphis crowd ate up everything. They're wild hot for him. They're a really good idea for it as well, for The Rock to just remind them of his history. Just so people were there who weren't aware that The Rock did start out his entire wrestling career in Memphis. Just to really, really make sure that everybody's on his side as he delivers all of this stuff. Because, of course, when they go to Monday Night Raw, they're all going to be behind Cody. So you get that nice visual difference between the two. And for me, that's something that works really well in builds to big matches. Like, look at the run into CM Punk versus MJF when they go to Long Island. And suddenly you're in an arena which is all for MJF. Like, he's our knobhead. He's our dickhead. He's ours. It means so much to the build when you get to see that. But this has Rock with full spotlight on him. It's all about him. It's his moment. He's the one that's going to whip Cody. He's the one that's going to do all of these things to him. And I feel like in terms of he and Roman having a bit of an issue at WrestleMania and that bubbling under the hot spotlight of everything, it's not just building up the animosity, which is blatantly there between Cody, Seth and Rocky. It's also setting the seeds for Roman too. That there's all of this stuff that Roman can easily use. And it positions Roman as the like company guy as well. The Rocky is the dickhead here. He's the authority. He's kind of just stealing all of the spotlight, whatever. The actual song itself, Memphis kind of ate up absolutely all of it. It's your typical Rocky stuff. It's that it's still the same thing of when he last came and did like proper insulty promo stuff when he's running with John Cena, where you got that feeling that nobody else is allowed to make the same kind of jokes that The Rock is. And somebody within a feud with him has got to be allowed to go to that next level. So you saw that in Monday Night Raw where Cody's given a bit of material to kind of step out a little bit. But once the program's over, what kind of happened last time was that nobody was allowed, the boundaries of what could be said within the feud were allowed to be pushed. But once that had finished, it's all right back to PG. No one's allowed to push anything out. It just kind of feels like, oh, if one person can do it, the rule kind of should be that anybody can do it as long as it fits their character. And that's been kind of like one problem in the past with the Rock characters. It felt like he's the only one that's allowed to jump to a certain level of insult. AEW is a great example of not every single character swears or says the word shit, but because anybody can, when they do say, you know that it means a lot. Whilst here, sometimes a lot of the animosity gets quelled a bit because they've got to say a word like crap or whatever. Like, the only insult they are allowed to say, the only one they have in their vocabulary is bitch. And it is kind of like marked, it is memed. But whilst they're in this like such a strong investor world where they've got to really be careful with the advertisers, be as friendly to kids and everybody as possible, they can't do what AEW's done. They have to stay within their wheelhouse. And when I get to the production stuff later, it's just to see that there is innovation across the board in WWE at the moment. And the product is white hot. Personally, I feel like it doesn't matter at all what AEW do on this run to WrestleMania. Like, it doesn't matter who they sign. Like, WWE is so white hot. Like, they could literally sign Sasha Banks, Kazuchika Okada, Will Ospreay, the three hottest free agents of the year. They could win all of them and it won't matter because WWE is such a hot product right now. And what we're seeing in terms of WWE, in terms of them doing their innovation alongside all of that momentum, is that it's having a great effect on the industry as well. Like, watching AEW Dynamite, I saw that they were also trying stuff out. Like, we're at that point where both companies are kind of established and on a strong, grounded setting, that now they're getting really creative with their stuff. Like, sure, they've got the strong walls, and now the stuff that they're painting is really interesting, and they're pushing each other to do better. And this is what us as wrestling fans, this is the dream world, where both promotions are signing top talent. That top talent is getting paid incredibly well, which is what I don't understand about the pushback with the Mercedes Moné being the highest paid woman in wrestling. and Kazuchika Okada getting such a high contract, you do know that now that's great for your people in WWE as well, because they can now go to their bosses and say, well, I can go to AEW and I can get this much money. Or Thingamabob has gone here and they're getting that much money. Therefore, I am asking for this amount, or I know I can get it over there. Which is great for the talent. They have a lot more sway. They have so much more say in themselves here. It gives them so much more power. And that against a corporation is so good. WWE being a monopoly was horrific in terms of that, the rights of the actual wrestlers and the workers. This competition is huge in that regard, to give them so much more say, so much more control and power. And WWE then, so massively underpaid, is insane in a way. What's happened with the Mercedes Moné stuff and the Kazuchika Okada stuff, that's great for everybody, including WWE wrestlers, because they can now demand more from their own employers. But yes, the Rock concert, slight tangent. I personally enjoyed it. I enjoyed the stupid little fun. It's one of those where it's Rocky humour. If you don't like the Rocky humour, you don't like the kind of jokes that he makes, then you're not going to like this one, because it's the exact same level of stuff. It's exactly what you would expect it to be. Anyway, in terms of the rest of SmackDown, we'll get back to the Cody Rock stuff via Cody's side of the promo. The main event of SmackDown, with the other like big thing to talk about, was Bayley versus Dakota Kai. The Bayley versus Damage Control feud finally got a spotlight again after weeks of what felt like, well, it was a couple of weeks of bubbling on the down low as the Bloodline like took all the spotlight. But it kind of felt like it was getting pretty popular and the fans were really behind Bayley and Damage Control. But the past few weeks where they've just done character stuff and had it bubble, it felt like almost that was a TV show telling you what you're meant to care about in terms of certain levels, in terms of what's going to be the main event. And this is not like they're telling you what you think you should like. Like, this is basic TV stuff. And that's one of the biggest problem I had with that Vince statement of, you don't like what you think you like what I tell you what you like. That's him believing his own stuff way too much. He's sniffing his own farts, like way too strongly there. That is actually just basic television stuff. In terms of like the amount of time you dedicate to a segment, to a character, the way that you frame them, you shoot them, the kind of dialogue that you give them. In wrestling, the wins you give them, but not just the wins, the kind of wins and the way that the commentary talks about those wins and the character and everything. You decide who gets that investment. And sometimes there's an outside force, because wrestling is what makes wrestling so cool and so different to everything else, is that those outside factors do feed into it. It's the reality on the reality of professional wrestling, which gives a shout out to Super Eyepatch Wolf as well, because he needs a shout out from me, not the other way around. The reality does feed it into professional wrestling. What they've done here with Damage Control is a bit more of a subtle shift. But if you go to social media, you can definitely see that people have noticed that investment in them in terms of giving them TV time wasn't there. Which is partly why when you see the shout for, oh, they should main event, but that hasn't happened through the TV show. That's like an off-TV thing. But the TV show is telling you the way that the amount of time dedicated to a thing, that the main event of Night 1 is going to be the Bloodline versus Cody and Seth. And it's dedicating TV time to it to tell you that you should be invested and interested in this. That's not a evil, we tell you what you're meant to like. And that's basic television trying to get your audience as invested or the most invested in the segment that you're going to be featuring the heaviest, or the characters that you're going to be featuring the most, or the arcs that are going to be the most important when throughout the course of the season. Basic TV stuff, which it feels like, now Kevin Dunn is gone, this current production understands all of that stuff. We're not getting anywhere near as much like accidental spotlights of certain aspects and things that we were getting under the Dunn / McMahon era. Like, this is competently written television. And because of what we've come out of, it feels incredibly innovative. When in reality, it's like basic stuff. Like, we're only just now, in terms of like the production stuff, we're now reaching both AEW and WWE, trying out new things almost every week, which is great to see. As a fan, that's like, again, as I said earlier, that is the dream scenario, where they're both pushing each other to be more creative all the time, and not just with their in-ring products and all their storytelling, but also their production. But that's like a basics thing. It's basic television to purposely give the characters that aren't going to be as heavily featured in the main spotlight, you just don't give them as much TV time, so that fans automatically just don't care as much, they're not as invested. Quite genuinely, the TV show in my head is Supernatural that I'm thinking of. It has a different character over the course of the season. And I'm pretty certain it's Tunnel Talk's fault. I'm pretty certain that's the one in there. My brother has also happened to have been rewatching the entire series because he's crazy. Quite genuinely, my brother, I know it's a tangent, my brother never finished watching Supernatural because he knew once he finished watching that final season, then that was it, no more Supernatural. So he never watched it. So now he's rewatching the entire thing so that he can rewatch the final season. Which is like, that sounds nice and kind of thing. Until you remember there's like 15, 16 years of that thing. That's a lot of Supernatural. But that's another show that will dedicate TV time to the characters that you meant to care about over the course of the season. And lo and behold, by the time you get to your final episodes, you're invested in all of these characters, all of these villains, blah, blah, blah. And not the ones that weren't featured as much, because they're not the big players. You're not meant to care as much. Unfortunately, the damage control stuff has just not had the TV time dedicated to it, so it screams that. In terms of the match itself, the numbers game at play in a little preview as to how WrestleMania could go down with the odds against the challenger, just against a different lass with Io at ringside working distraction until it all blows over. The main event ending in DQ, ushering a goodies run out. Naomi out first, but the numbers still too much. Io's moonsault connecting to the face of Paul Bailey. Good lord. The lack of Belair was all set up last week with the post-match shenanigans through her talking to Naomi and showing no empathy for Bailey after she went against damage control last year. Like, the year prior was Belair on the bad end of damage control shenanigans, and Bailey was the head of that. Characters actually living in this world and the consequences of actions meaning things and there being continuity. It makes sense, all the sense of the world, that Bianca Belair would not just jump to Bayley's side. Like, she did all of that shit to her, why would she jump there? Or at least she's hesitant to do so, it's going to take something more for her to get there. Which then sets up Naomi making the save tonight. The angle clearly worked a treat, with the fans chanting EST for Bianca. Now, the pressure for her to team with Bayley can naturally bubble up. For me, that crowd response was an exact little sign of, nailed it. Because that's the feeling that you want. You want the fans to want Bianca to jump up and defend by Bayley's side instead of her just... It makes no character sense for her to just do it. In the Vince era, she would have just done it because, you know, continuity existed. You're lucky if it existed outside of 3 weeks. But here, we're talking over a year ago and we've got this continuity with Bianca and Bayley and they're building up to have the fans want Bianca specifically to tag alongside Bayley or at least to fight against damage control. And this is proof they nailed it. Didn't need any rant, didn't need any promo from anybody to set it up. They'd technically... The backstage segment from last week set it up perfectly. The fans were all on that right side. Speaking of teams, the WrestleMania 40 Tag Team Championship qualifiers going on SmackDown. Legado del Fantasma, Angel and Berto versus LWO's Wild. And Jeremy didn't... I've completely forgot he's called Cruz del Toro. I've been calling him Raul Mendoza this entire time, not realising it had a name change. Also, poor Humberto Carrillo, who's now just Bert. It's Berto. Bert and Angle. Poor Bert and Angle. The feuding factions joining over a spot that could guarantee one of them faces different teams in Philly. Oh, what an opportunity. Escape the Vortex, my friends. A big... I personally don't expect them to escape the Vortex because of what this is, this night set up. A big pop and a big old kick to the sternum for the win for our baddies. A seesaw battle, as Graves described it. Toro shoved into the back barricade to stop him being able to break the pin. It was a fine match. We've just seen these fight a lot. And at this point, there's not much difference between all of these different fights. I've seen LWO and Legado del Fantasma fight so much. I'm just ready for the WrestleMania big schmals or whatever it's going to be. The other match was New Catch Republic versus Pretty Deadly. No entrances for anybody. Wrap it up quick, chaps. At least they got a nice wide camera angle shot panning down from up high. Birmingham to poor Elton Prince as Dunn and Bate grab the win. The Birmingham boys advance to face the Legado lads in the bracket final, and that's why I don't expect this Legado del Fantasma or LWO kind of split to be full. I'm expecting LWO to cost Legado next week and the Birmingham lads advance to WrestleMania. This WrestleMania kind of ladder match is starting to be the lads that Triple H loves all together in one big match. LA Knight got a little promo time out on the stage, transitioning their feud out to in front of the fans after a couple weeks of Knight getting mad at televisions. Knight made his frustrations public as AJ Styles is yet again not on Smackers. A nice little bit with AJ flying to Australia to take him out, only to never show his face on Fridays ever again. The ultimate heel ducking. The ultimate move. And this isn't like a... Oh, the Undertaker can't show up, so Bray's got to do the entire feud by himself. Like, oh, no, it's an amazing villain tactic. Just, you know, you hit him, he sets up the entire match. You never have to show your face. You're just sitting there back healing. And yeah, then you get your whole WrestleMania build done by him just being annoyed at you. And you didn't have to really show up at all. You just cash those checks. And Knight uses the absence to fuel his WrestleMania challenge for AJ. The man getting himself his big WrestleMania spotlight. I feel like it's a spot that the LA character like kind of really needs. There is the whole conversation about, does the LA Knight character and the way that he is have a strong place in the main event in the world where The Rock does exist? he had a lot of like callback little parts about him whilst when The Rock wasn't there. But now The Rock is here and he's seen the real deal. Where does Knight kind of fit? The way that I'm talking about this match, it's like I've already settled for, AJ's going to put LA Knight over. But this is WWE, so let's not forget. I don't know why I'm stuck on 2013, the WrestleMania in New York, or wherever it was, New Jersey, where they had Mark Henry just beat Ryback. Sure, Ryback was the guy who was gaining a lot of momentum with the fans. The end of 2012, they put a lot of stock in building him up. He faces Mark Henry at that point, like towards the tail end of his career. And yeah, sure, let's just have Mark Henry beat this rising star, like, who in December and whatnot and was rising the ranks fighting CM Punk, the world champion, who at the Royal Rumble was number 30 and was a big deal. Like, I think he was in the final two, John Cena at the Royal Rumble, and then Mark Henry just beats him at WrestleMania. Because, lol, he didn't see that coming. Wasn't that a nice surprise? You know, it was a surprise, but I thought you meant to be building your new stars, and now you've just completely curtailed him. And if I'm right, even after WrestleMania, they had Ryback turn against John Cena to a huge pop from the fans, but they just had him lose to Mark Henry the night before. That's what I mean by it wasn't just like 2015, 16 onwards. Like, WWE was strained for quite some time before it. The thing just didn't make sense. Logan Paul accidentally convinces Nick Aldis to set him up with two challenges for WrestleMania. The Paul lad's now got himself a stage against Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. Paul working with Waller and Theory to work distractions everywhere in Orton's match against the Aussie, only to then face the consequences of his actions. Paul Heyman doing his best to make everybody break with his jump scare reaction to Kayla's slide in. Also a nice little way to show that he's on edge when Kayla jumps in to just give an interview and he's like, oh my god! I don't think of it. But that's a nice little way. Just the Bloodline's meant to be like the most stable and strong that they've ever been. Yet Paul Heyman has that reaction to Kayla and is a performer that understands a lot of the little things in terms of character reactions that can tell you information about their state. That's a nice little way just to feed in that. But why is Paul Heyman so on edge? If everything is so strong and everybody's so confident and the Bloodline is so stable, why is Paul Heyman that on edge? Anyway, that's the end of SmackDown, doing a really good job building up stuff for WrestleMania. And it's all falling into place. And obviously, this show kicks off with Rocky and his performance, which you can just watch on YouTube. That's the thing with modern-day WWE. Is like, with a lot of these segments, you don't have to watch the show. Like, no, you can pop onto YouTube or TikTok. Just watch a quick segment there. Anyway, after that, we're going to jump over to Monday Night Raw and Cody in a full-on black suit. You know what's great for podcast descriptions when leading into a clip? Normally when you lead into a clip, a visual lead-in. Probably not. Yeah, here is Cody in a black suit. Yeah, that's not like any use to at all. It's an audio clip. When I said that, you didn't then see Cody in a black suit. Why did I lead in like that? Anyway, black suit Cody answered Rocky's sing-song. Proof of just how good at this Rhodes has become. A promo that did a great job, also paired with Cole's commentary, I thought was also aided it really strongly, of putting the idea in your head of, wait, what if Cody doesn't win? And I've not been on social media like that strong this week, but I wouldn't have been surprised if there were some people asking those questions, like, wait, is there a chance that Cody doesn't win? And that's what felt like this entire segment with Cody and Heyman and whatnot, and the way the commentary was kind of talking about it was kind of meant to put in there. It's all been framed like, okay, Cody is definitely winning, which has kind of just been the whole framing of this entire story. It's like, okay, we're actually going to do the thing this time. But this segment was all about trying to put a little doubt in there. It makes sense for the Cody character to be experiencing that as well, because, he's not in this outside world of analysing the narrative. He's trying to finish the story. He's not beat by beat breaking it down and making a four or five hour YouTube video on it. That's not what's going on here. Great reframing of Rocky's apparent self-ownership. Like, you're not being a heel, you're being an asshole. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, yep, feel free to clip those eloquent Cody words for future social media shaming. Cody taking the mocking of his on-screen crying and reframes that too against the backstage crying of The Rock to the board when saving the WWE didn't become the slam dunk PR win for him that it was designed to be. Calling Rock a whiny succubus popped me, but we all know the Pavlovian overhaul from the Vince production era. Like, you've got to say the magic word, Cody. That means you're a whiny bitch. There we go. There's your pop. He said the one word that they have in their vocabulary. There we go. That gets you your pop. And then Cody's like, well, I know your mum too, mate. Oh, that's enough. And Cody bigging up his own mum. You said that she would be scared of you whipping me like that, but you don't know my mum. She's not that kind of person. For this show here, after Cody's reacted to all of the rock stuff, there's no rock, there's no Roman on this show. Paul Heyman is there. He was set up earlier as being there for the earlier Jimmy and Jay segment, which kicked off the show, of which Solo Sikoa was also present. So it made sense just in your head that Heyman would be there for that. I didn't link at all to the Cody stuff. I was like, okay, they're all here for that segment because they're setting up the Jimmy Jay match. Heyman is there to bring Roman Reigns back into the focus as the figurehead, a much needed dispelling of the rocky fog that's been clouding everything on this build. But part of me thinks it's also purposeful. And Roman, in what's meant to be like the huge climax of his years-long reign, so much of the focus is on Rocky. And you can use that for the Roman character. I'm assuming some people will read that as a huge mistake in that it takes a lot of the focus off of Roman for the main event. Because it's supposed to be like his big, massive ending to his huge reign where he gives all of the momentum to Cody. But the Rocky is such a huge focus of this that he's becoming the spotlight. But part of me thinks, because they're still going to do the Roman-Rocky match, that this is such a great way to give Roman all of the ammunition he needs when he finally does turn to do that match. Cody agreeing to Heyman's offer to show up to Smackers alone to guarantee himself a genuine one-on-one face-to-face with Reigns. After the break, a backstage segment with Jay, letting us know our goody characters aren't idiots and are aware of the obvious trap setup that blatantly was. I like it when, you know, good guys aren't idiots and do know what is the obvious. That the information that you made so clear to the audience kind of makes sense to the characters that were in there also picked up on that too. Cody is going to go there one-on-one and he knows that he's stepping into a trap, but he's going to do it anyway. But yeah, the entire point was just to bounce off of the musical act from Memphis and just reframe a lot of the insult to be in his favour. I thought they did a really, really good job of that, of them bouncing all that stuff off to continue setting up the match. I feel like he and Paul Heyman did a really good job of just building up Roman quite a bit. And that's going to really help set up this SmackDown where they're going to have the one-on-one face-to-face. Because even though I'm like, there's been so much spotlight on The Rock that it feels like Roman needs a bit of an up, but this setup, then doing that on SmackDown, I'll be so surprised after SmackDown that if it doesn't feel like Roman's like a lot more in the spotlight. Because you got TV time to actually do this stuff. Like those who were saying, those idiots online who were saying, what's the story with Daniel Bryan and Will Ospreay? First of all, you watch the product, you know what the story is. So obviously, there's a reason those people who were saying that had to wait 5 days to get their opinions. Instead of having them after the day after the show aired, and suddenly they've got an opinion on the show that aired on Wednesday, days after the conversation moved on. The AEW's aired two whole other shows after it. Then you've got such a strong opinion come Sunday. I wonder why that is. But yeah, just like, where's the story? Like, you do know that the pay-per-view for AEW Dynasty is not till the end of April. Like, they've got a full month to go until the show. This isn't WWE of 3 week builds. Like, no. AEW have got, like, ages. They've got a full month until their match. That's such a long time. And I'm applying that logic here. Currently, Roman Reigns feels like he's had his spotlight stolen by The Rock. And, of course, I may be reading that that's on purpose to give ammunition for the future for The Rock. But it's kind of true that Roman Reigns, in his final kind of climactic part of his reign, his spotlight's kind of been taken away from him. That said, like, it's not WrestleMania now. They've still got time to build up this stuff. And there is a face-to-face happening this time on SmackDown. And a lot of that stuff, I feel like, will be addressed. Roman gets his spotlight there, face-to-face with Cody, to really build the WrestleMania match. So you still got 3 SmackDowns. As of me recording, the day before Friday, we've got 3 SmackDowns left. Anyway, let's move on to going through the show in order. Opened up with the Usos and the feud, whose story makes no sense because Jimmy left the bloodline first. It's our version of hands off first. No, Jimmy left first. It makes no sense. Rewriting, so it's Jay who made the decision to leave. When we had weeks this summer of Jimmy trying to convince his brother to leave, of the SummerSlam angle being given the logic of Jimmy protecting his brother from becoming tribal chief, protecting him from what he saw Roman become, like, nah, those 2 months of Teddy completely rewritten. Now, it was Jay who left. Fine, whatever. Nice touch with Jay being the brother to show love. Like, the dynamic is right, the visual storytelling is all grand, but the verbal story jabbering makes no line of sense. It's not like it was like something that was shown over the course of a week. Like, this was the build of the summer. And it was the aid of Jimmy, knowing he had his brother by his side, that he was finally able to super kick Roman Reigns. he left with Jimmy. Jimmy left first, and then Jay was like, fine, we can do it. It felt like the big brother finally was able to pull Jay out. And then like, Jimmy's entire run, like, he came in second, and it was like he was never fully convinced. Their storyline was done so well throughout the bloodline, and now it's been completely reassessed. That makes no line of sense, because that one huge thing, Jimmy left first. Completely falls apart, Jimmy left first. It's what it used to be like in the Vince era. You'd be watching a segment and go, wait, that makes no sense, because that's not what you showed on the TV. That's not the vibe I was given. Why is this happening? Like, that was the Vince era in a nutshell, for so many things across the board. Just continuity and logic just wasn't there. Sometimes it's just nice to just wind back the clock and remember what it felt like. And this segment did that. You're watching it, you're enjoying it, and then you think about it for a second, like, but no, but Jimmy left first. That makes no sense. The WWE Tag Team qualifiers for Raw, we opened with their DIY versus the Creed Brothers. Good lord, these new themes are atrocious. Both these teams' entrance music actively working against them. Like, not just in terms of their characters, but they're so crap, they're like a hurdle in front of the axe getting over. Luckily, all four absolutely stellar in the ring. This match was amazing. But, you know, a pretty basic statement to say the entrances should be in service of the characters instead of being a hurdle to get over, and then you watch them wrestle and then you get into them. DIY, the experienced flowing team, the Creed's given the spotlight as the incredibly impressive young innovative team on showcase. As great a team as they are, the young lads' biggest moments came from each other's solo displays, which as the match progresses, because they were given time for it to elaborate, comes into play. The double DIY submission powered out into a damn impressive double fireman's carry launching the lads into each other. Also a big pop for the double moonsault that followed. Seeing lads the size of the Creed Brothers doing young buck spots. It's like, oh, yeah, that is really impressive. The Creed Brothers undoing coming from that team experience when that came into play at its highest point towards the end of the match. A back and forth counter reversal roll-up conclusion. DIY getting the win. Entering the Triple H Black and Gold era NXT ladder match spectacular for WrestleMania. I mean, something that maybe takes away from the feeling a little bit. Awesome Truth also qualified on this show, facing Indus Shear. Hey, not all tag qualifiers are created equal. This one was just a silly little bit of fun to get Truth and Miz into the WrestleMania ladder times. R-Truth winning by getting knocked out and falling into the pin. There's your proof. It's a silly little fun. Candice LeRae continued her baddie turn this week, going on a physical rampage after her verbal tag from last week. Katana Chance may be hurting her knee, but nope, it was all a setup for LeRae to viciously snap in, take advantage for the win. Like, hey, it's just nice to see Candice get an actual character. I'm all up for her having an actual character with something to actually play with. The IC title match contract signing came next. What a segment this was. The segment preluded by a backstage chinwag between Chad Gable and Sammy. Gable aired his frustrations that this just means more to him. Not only does it mean more to him, but he's equally frustrated because he doesn't believe Sammy can beat Gunter, which then directly feeds into the contract signing and what Sammy says to Gunter once he sat there in front of him. People not believing in him, not believing he can do it, that kindles his fire. Gunter just confidently and cockily feeds on all of Sammy's fears. So well done. Sammy stepping up and amping himself up that he can. But commentary hammers home after questioning if he's just saying that or really believes he can beat Gunther. The segment then transitioning with one top tier shot. A single shot walking behind Sammy as he speed walks past the curtain, through Gorilla and backstage past R-Truth and friends, transitioning like it's Holby City as it stays with... Yeah, you Americans are going to get that reference. As it then transitions to the new characters and they do their little segment, and then we walk out with the Awesome Truth for their entrance all in one single shot, starting with Sammy walking backstage and finishing with Awesome Truth in the ring. Like, such well done. The Dunn is dead and well below the dirt. It's so good. After said tag match, we follow Sammy into Chad's path, seeing what was really the seed of his words for Gunter, directly asking Gable why the man thinks he can't beat the IC champion. It was all tied in well together, and for me, that's why I made the note of the commentary hammering it home. Just, is he really saying it, or like, does he really believe it? And when he goes to Chad Gable afterwards, you can tell that maybe he's not assuring himself of his words that he'd like us to believe he is, or as much as he'd like to be. As for Drew McIntyre, he got interrupted by Seth Rollins before he could even step through the ropes. Poor Scottish lad. Seth mocking Drew's words from the week earlier, fully owning that he's a spotlight junkie. But he's owning it. He's not saying it in a negative way. To Drew's dismay, as he's now just ready to simply take Seth's title at WrestleMania, it's not his fault if Seth won't take things seriously. Seth biting back that he didn't mean this all like this as a joke, because this is what he lives for, and that's the prestige he's tried to give to the title. Drew's character on side of that as a workhorse title worthy of him winning, but not happy with Seth bringing the need for the spotlight as a factor too, which is a perfect setup for Seth to remind us that a core conceit of Drew's character is his hypocrisy. What he's just told to Seth, like, that is exactly what Drew does too. And Drew is one of the most grounded characters in terms of the things that he says, points out with other characters. He puts out like so much of their genuine flaws, and he feels like such a grounded character because of it. But what really makes a character work is the negatives, is the things that work against him. It's not just his strengths, it's his weaknesses as well. It's those traits too that make the character so strong, and his hypocrisy is such a huge part of that. Yet another great week for the Drew McIntyre Seth Rollins little dynamic they got going on. Drew's such a strong character. And finally, the main event was the last woman standing, Becky Lynch versus Nia Jax. Joe Biden met the man this week. I'm sure he was fangirling, or as much as he can at his age. I've seen more Joe Biden than I thought I would. I've been rewatching Parks and Rec. Joe Biden and Michelle Obama. I completely forgotten that either of those were like legit just in the sitcom. They were just there. We want tables, the conditioned response for no DQ matches. I note it because I'm covering WWE here. But really, it only irks me when the chants pop up in AW. Like, I hear it in WWE and I write the jokey things, like, oh, here we go, here's a conditioned response. But in AEW, it feels like here is a conditioned chant from the other place. It doesn't feel like something that belongs in AEW. And part of the reason that the chant lasted as long as they did is just because the product itself wasn't that interesting and fans were entertaining themselves. Wasn't as much to get invested in, so fans would entertain themselves with chants like this. In AEW, that's not the case. But it's a conditioned response in the current WWE era, so the fans kind of translate over. Anyway, the table they had was not playing ball, so always fun to have a wild card at play. A main event, Nia Jax extending her streak to 2. A great Samoan drop into that corner, crashing through that table the crowd wanted so damn much. But lucky them, they got 2 tables. Lynch getting her own moment with a damn well-shot manhandle slam off the apron, crashing both ladders through another table. Cameraman was by the announce table, nice and level, kind of squatting down a little bit, like he's interviewing a wrestler, with the table and then looking up. Bex then, with a leg drop off of a ladder, crashing Jax through the announce table to a great pop. Honestly, it was nice to see a last woman standing match ending in a non-screwy finish. Just because he got, especially in WWE, so many times a last man standing match, we were like, we need something big, we need something huge to end it with. And this was just, we're just going to beat the crap out of each other, and then I'm going to hit this huge leg drop off this ladder, crash through the table, and we end it on the caution to the wind spot after we've both just crashed each other through tables and tried to beat each other up. I like that as an ending to a last woman standing match. Yeah, I think it works really well. Lynch's leg taking a knock at some point, maybe off the ladder, maybe through the table with the manhandle slam. But yeah, at some point, it took some form of knock as she stands on one leg for the closing stare down with Rhea Ripley. So I'm not saying that this is there a chance there could be a problem with this match? I'm saying that, if anything, it just adds to their story nicely with a perfect addition to the visual. Like, it's such a perfect additional little visual to the story that they're telling, of Rhea Ripley being able to just sit back with her beers in the back and have a great time hanging with the Judgment Day, whilst Becky Lynch is picking fights left and right to a point where she's having a last woman standing match just a few weeks out. Like, and she's been having constant fights with Nia Jax and Liv Morgan, and she's getting increasingly worn down as the weeks go on. And now where she stares down Rhea Ripley, she's hobbling on one leg. It may not have been a planned visual, but it adds to the story so perfectly. Where I was like, just use it. Use that. That is so perfect for the story that you're trying to tell. Yeah, the visual tells everything. I mean, I'd love it if everybody literally just walked out with a beer can in her hand or something. Just to show how relaxed she is as a champion. Like, I'm not picking any fights. I'm just having a great time here. Anyway, that is the end of Monday Night Raw and the end of this week's show. There is no NXT this week. And looking at the time of recording, I'm 100% right. Absolutely nailed the time of recording I try and go for. But yeah, so Monday Night Raw was, so far WWE in a really good balance of setting up WrestleMania, or at least setting up notes, which then Monday Night Raw just bounces off of and sets up SmackDown as well. So there's constant to and fro of just continued momentum. There's not been much of a stall in that. The time you feel the stall the most is like mid-card of SmackDown. Whilst you're watching the show, and maybe especially the last couple of weeks when Damage Control weren't really being heavily featured, That middle just felt pretty weak. This week wasn't as bad, but it's not felt. I'd call that the biggest lull type of thing. It's just like the mid-card of SmackDown just feels a little bit. Like, you get your Logan Paul stuff and your Bloodline stuff, often bookending the shows. As soon as they injected Damage Control back, it's like, yeah, that's your third thing. You probably needed that as, like, a core part of your show where it's having time dedicated to it. These would be, like, the three things that all feel important. But they were kind of, like, limiting the TV time a bit for Damage Control, when, really, for me, it should have been, like, a focus part, like it was this week. Also, both shows main evented by women's matches. And it's so just, like, not a big thing that's talked about that I feel like that's the best world in terms of presenting them as equal. Is that we're now at a point where both SmackDown and Raw main evented by women, and it's not even, like, a no. Like, it just is a thing, and we just talk about the matches, and we don't talk about that fact. But it's a nice little pause. It's like, yeah, we've done it. We've got to that point. We've done it. We've made it to that note. It's like, no. Like equality is not solved. It's not finished. But Cody didn't solve racism. It's still a thing. But nice to have made it to that notch in the belt. Let's all continue getting fat together. I don't know if the microphone will pick up me patting my belly there. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the show. With that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about the face-to-face with Cody and Roman Reigns, and then he said Seth Rollins, and whatever happens on Monday Night Raw, who knows. And as I disappear, we'll say, I'm also joining AEW. Am I enjoying it? Like, if you're blindly just not watching one of the products, or if you're one of those people that just waits for your opinion to drop on a Sunday, and I think you know what I mean, you're just missing out. But both companies are on pretty strong momentum at the moment. I'm enjoying Dynamite so much at the moment, and as I was talking about, the momentum from SmackDown to Raw bouncing really nicely too in the build to WrestleMania. It's a great little moment to be a wrestling fan. Anyway, with that, I'll be back next week. Ta-ra, ta-ra.